Hello, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
You live in East Tubman now.
Yes.
And I've come to interview you as a volunteer from the Little Ouse Headwaters Project.
Yes.
So, can you please tell me where you were born?
I was born at Hitcher in Suffolk, quite a long time ago. My name is Alec Bull, and my father's occupation was the owner-occupier, farmer, small farmer. I went to school in Bury St Edmunds, but left when I was 14 to help on the farm during the war. So from then on I was working on the land, and I got married when I was 20. And we lived first at Icklingham in Suffolk. And from there we moved to Tinworth, where I was looking after a herd of cows for 2 years. The farmer was one of those with a very short fuse, and if he was crossed, you were off the farm in about 5 minutes. Well, so I managed to get a week's notice. And I put an advert. This is relevant to how difficult it is to get a job today. I put an advert in the East Anglian Daily Times under my own name, and by 2 days later I'd had 11 replies, several of which were suitable. But I chose to go to Garbleshire with Mr. John Laurie, and we were there from, was it late October 1951 until about the same time in 1952. Yes, well, that brings me into Garbleshire. Where do I go to now on this?
And things like that, that'd be great.
Yeah, right. Yes, I don't know whether I ought to have my notes with me, I think. Well, when we moved to Garbleshire, we were moved in by the gentleman called Will Backlog, who was the coal merchant in Garbleshire. He did John Laurie's carting. And I think he was, I don't know, do you know where he was?
I've seen your map.
Yeah.
And it shows he lived up on one of the Garbleshire Ling properties.
No.
Was he up in that
No, area? No. He got a coal yard down at Smallworth, I think.
Oh, was he? Right.
Yes, down that way. Just anyhow, either on what they call the Common.
Yeah.
Which the rest of the bit that joined Broomscot Common.
Yes.
Where the mill is.
I know, yes.
And, anyhow, we arrived there. I was to be one of six cowmen looking after 100 cows. Nowadays, there's one cowman looking after 300, 400, 500 cows, and all the rest is done automatically. We worked, we worked a 6 day a week with a slight difference in that it was a rolling day off. We started on Monday off, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, but when we got to the following week, we had Saturday, Sunday and Monday. We had a 3 day weekend every 6 weeks, which is very, very good in those days. The pay was reasonable for the time. I think it was about I can't remember exactly, but I think it was about £7 a week for a week, which would be, well, it was from 5 to 5 nominally, but with 1 hour for breakfast and 2 hours for lunch. And but if you had to work any overtime, like in the evenings, if you didn't get any extra for it.
Did they give you a house?
Yes. We lived in one of the houses on the Ling. Hmm. The first one you come to past the farm, actually. Got a nice pond in front of it.
So that was rent-free, was it?
Oh, yes, yes. Yeah. And all the houses on the Ling at that time were occupied by people who worked on the farm. There, in addition to the six cowmen, there was a pigman, Billy Baker, who lived in a cottage at the top of Soap Hill with his wife and 10 children. And he had to double up when there was illness or anything in the cowshed, as also, in addition to looking after a big pig unit, he had to come in and do the some milking. He also was an excellent shoe repairer. He repaired everybody's shoes on the Ling, and at the same time, I've always found it a bit hard to believe. He reckoned he read three library books a week.
Gosh, that is a lot.
Yes. But anyhow, he was one of the regulars. Percy Alden, who lived just further down on Ling, I don't know whether his mother was still alive, but certainly his father was. He was a retired blacksmith. He was the second cowman. And he could turn his hand to anything, because on two occasions he was called out of the cowshed, and Billy Baker had to come in, because on the first occasion he had to show the ordinary labourers on the farm how to lay a drain, field drain. And on another occasion he was called out to make clay lump bricks for repairs to the cottages and so on, and barns, because most of the buildings were up there at that time were clay lump. And I should imagine he was one of the last people who knew how to do it. They didn't have a clay pit, but they'd got very deep ditches. And before he did any making any of these bricks, two or three of the men off the farm would spend a week or so digging out the ditches another foot deeper to get the clay. And that would then be laid in a bed, and straw would be spread over it. And from memory, they then had the cowshed, because there was one horse allocated for carting backwards and forwards to the cowshed. That was called Bonnie. I seem to remember that Bonnie had to tread backwards and forwards over this clay lump to mix the straw in with the stuff. And Percy then had to cut it out into blocks, into a mould, and leave it to dry for about a fortnight, and there you were. I think he must have been one of the last who knew how to do that. The head cowman, Fred Shaw, he had his own cottage down near the windmill somewhere. I never was exactly sure where it was, but Fred, he had a wife and one daughter, and I heard later that he died when he was 39 when I was there, and I think he died when he was 49, because he used to smoke an ounce of Churchman's County Shag a day.
That is a lot.
Yes, Percy used to smoke 4 ounces of Digger a week.
And these were quite strong tobaccos, were they?
Oh, a shag. Yeah, shag tobacco. Hand-rolled in the cigarettes. Because no smoking was allowed during milking. But that was all right the rest of the time. Next door to us, when we went there, he hadn't been there long. It was a little bantam cock by the name of Ernie Turrell. And Ernie was strut up and down with his chest puffed out as if he owned the place. He was only about 5'3", but anybody crossed him, he'd challenge him to a fight. And he lived with his wife, who was 14 years his senior, and 11-year-old daughter. They also had a female lodger, which was the reason why they moved rather suddenly. And they were followed by a chap called Hugh England, who had recently married to one of her Shaw sisters. And they were still there when we left. And another, the third Cameron, you might say, was Harry Shaw, known as Lauder, because after Harry Lauder, the Scots singer, comedian, so on. But he was another of Fred's brothers, and I think he's still living with his parents in the village. But later on, because I kept in touch with Percy Alderton until he died, practically. And I think that was when John died. And one of the sons took the farm on. And they built a big new kerry on the opposite side of the road, on a roundabout. So the carriage would come on, and they'd move round, and the time they got round, they'd come off again, all done. And that reduced the number of cameras to three. And also, they started using tractors for tidying up and so on. So Harry Shaw he left at that time, and last I heard of him, he was tractor driver at Manor Farm, Honington, right on the crossroads.
Yes.
Then there's Harold Pratt, is known always as Hally. He was a bit of an oddball, really. He was quite a good cowman, but he's a lad with a temper. And he, on one occasion, he had an argument with Ernie Torrell, which ended up with Ernie lying on his back across the shafts behind the horse. And Percy was very busy pulling Hally off. They were quite, you know, rough and tumble days.
Do you remember what the fight was about?
No, I don't know. Except that Ernie Toll was always needling everybody. And he actually, before he suddenly left, he got so infuriated at Percy, because Percy used to feed the cows, do the dairy work. He was second cowman. He came to me one day. He said, "Alec," he said, "will you do my work this morning?" He said, "I want to set that log be." So, because I and Ernie used to have to do the mucking out, get the straw and so on. So Percy was a real hard worker. And they got to the stage of, you know, they used to get the straw from straw stacks along the road. They had a whole line of straw stacks from, because the corn was brought and thrashed in the old-fashioned way. And so they goes along to get a load of straw. Percy pitches great big lumps down on the cart, which Ernie couldn't keep on top of. And he got so furious that when he came down, he had to stay on the load until he got into the yard. He slid down and sort of framed up. He was going to give Percy a belt. Percy picked him up by the scruff of the neck and the seat of his pants, and was just going to chuck him in the horse pond when Lenny Bailey, the head horseman, persuaded him otherwise. I don't know whether this is relevant to what you're hoping for.
I mean, I shouldn't think.
Oh, no. Well, after that, Percy very quickly... No, not Percy. Ernie very quickly found himself another job, and they were on the move. And the day they moved, it came out that the female lodger was expecting. But the method of moving was rather unusual. We were having breakfast because we our kitchen was projected so that there was a window which we kept with the curtains on, looked towards their backyard. And we're having breakfast and there's this tremendous crash. So I just went and peeped around the curtain. Ernie was throwing the brass bedsteads out the bedroom window. As the quickest way to get them down.
And possibly the stairs were too narrow.
Could have been. But, I was talking about Hal Pratt, Hallie. He'd been in the Navy, and he used to regale us with tales of, because he was at Lossiemouth, tales of 40-gallon drums of aviation spirit being changed from one boat to another on foggy nights on the Lock. But he apparently got away with it because after a few years, he met his wife up there, and she came from Glasgow. They went back up there and he started his own builds business. I don't know what happened to him after that. Who else was there? There was two hogs. I think one of the oldest one was Ernie as well. He lived in the cottage next to Percy Oldham. And he was the gardener. I think he was in his 50s. And his younger brother, whose first name I don't remember, but he was always called Winnicker, which was a very good name for him, actually. But they were the only two workers out of 33 on the farm that were over 40. They were all young. And most of the work on the farm was done piecework, sugar beating, hedging, ditching. And one of one of Fred Shaw's brothers, who was called Stumpy, I don't know what his first name was, he lived in one of the cottages on the other cottages on the Ling. He wasn't very tall, but he was a tremendous worker, and he managed to lift, knock, and top 2.5 acres of sugar beet in a week.
On his own.
On his own, yeah. He was the leading light in that sort of thing, and of course everybody had to do a bit of, well, during the summer the cameramen had to do light evenings. The cameramen had to go and do a bit of chopping out and singling and so on, and that was all done by the chain, which is 22 yards for the people who don't know.
So you got paid a certain amount for doing that chain.
Yeah. Yes, I don't remember what it was, but the hedges were all trimmed, again piecework. I don't know if, because the buildings were all clay lump, and they were all tarred, and some of them were tarred each summer between house and harvest during the slack time, but I don't know whether that was done piecework. I don't remember if it was. Might amount to a rather lot of tar being splashed about. Other people on the farm, I don't know, there's a tall, very tall German prisoner of war, had been a prisoner of war, by the name of Lofty, lived in a cottage over the Wars North Lop with a footpath across to the Ling. He still wore, although this was 1952, he still wore the brown, dark brown uniform with the patches on the knees and so on, but he was married to an English girl and seemed quite settled there.
What was his work on the farm?
He was a general farm worker.
So he did anything?
He did anything.
Ditching, hedging?
Yes. Yes, whatever came along. He was a good worker. I presume he'd probably been on a farm, you know, in before the war. Yes, there was also Fergusons who lived in the old farmhouse near the piggery. He was a general farm worker. He was very accident prone. We came across him some years later, well, soon after we came back to Norfolk permanently. And he'd had two major accidents since we'd first known him, I think. But I think he died quite a number of years ago now. I think they lived at Sam Tony. Can't think of anybody else that I knew particularly well on the farm. Of course, there was John Lowry. He died when he was only 49. I think he had a heart attack. And his eldest son, who was also John, by that time was farming at Carlton Road. He had two daughters, Heather and Helen Heather. I don't know what happened to either of them. I presume they married in a farming family somewhere or other. But the youngest son, Jimmy, he was about 16 when we were there. And, of course, as I mentioned to you, Ernie Toll was always for fighting everybody. Well, Jimmy had been taught boxing at school. So they egged Jimmy on to come and give Ernie a bout and bring his boxing gloves and give Ernie a bout in the cow shed. Well, that was the most hilarious thing you ever saw, because Ernie hadn't any idea of, you know, he just went... everything got parried. And he was made to look a right fool, actually. Some years back now, after I published a book on my life looking after cows, I had a letter from, no, I had a phone call from old Mrs. Lowry, because she was still alive. We go over and see her, which we did. She was 92 at the time, I believe. And she's got all those buttons. She was still very much alert and so on, although she's confined to a wheelchair or a mobility scooter, which I believe when we were there, she'd recently managed to turn it over at the bottom of the garden and had to be rescued. But Jimmy had been divorced and was living with his mother at that time. I don't know, he may still be there. I know the old lady died sometime after that. Don't think I can say too much more about the farm.
You were going to mention a bit about the coal merchant and the other things he did, like help people move.
Oh, yes, yes. He, apart from helping people move and doing coal rounds and so on, he was also a general haulier. And he used to do all the carting haulage for the farm, including sugar beet to the factory. Which reminds me that most of the cottages, and including the one that Fred had down on the common, had got large gardens, sort of half an acre or so. And the chaps who were there permanently, they used to pool their resources. Somebody, perhaps one of them, I think Percy did it one year, ploughed all these half-acre plots. They then all had the same crop, either potatoes or sugar beet. And the year we were there, they had got enough sugar beet between them to send a lorry load to the factory. John Lowry got the permit for them. They